Ah, well, good day to you all who are listening. I'm Mary, Mary Herbert. I was born in Dublin, and at the age of 3 and a half, my whole family was split up, and I came to UK. So I was the youngest of five in my family, came to UK and became the youngest of seven, had six older brothers in my new family, and lived in Cambridge for 2 years. After that, my father, who was a professor of veterinary science, went to Sri Lanka, took us all, four of the boys, because two did their national service, took us to Sri Lanka, where I lived till I was 18, with trips away to India and Australia and various places in between. My family, you know, the boys all went their different ways, and I grew up on campus in a place called Peridinha, in the sort of centre of the island. And so I was educated at home for the first few years. And so from time to time, I would be invited to a lecture at the university, and also learned how to fence with one of the professors. So it was a sort of unusual life, but isolated from youngsters of my own age. The funny thing, when I was 12, went to school in India and in the hills of South India, Kodaikanal, and I can remember thinking, yeah, well, this is an interesting experience. But they're not very diplomatic. I think because when I got off the bus in my homemade clothes, a girl who'd speaking to somebody else said, "Who's that?" pointing at me. And I said, "I'm Mary," in the wonderful elocution that I was meant to say, which, of course, is the worst thing you want when you're in a new boarding school. However, it was delightful. And that led, in fact, being there led to a life of travel, insofar as I went to visit brothers in Australia. And I'd always been an entertainer, because I managed to pick up I observed people a lot and managed to pick up, certainly the accents and the stories of what was going on, certainly in Sri Lanka. So even at school, I used to sing songs, "Annie, Get Your Gun," and all of that. So the idea was, people thought, oh, well, she'll obviously go on stage. So I did end up at drama school in London, did a teacher's training course there, and my beautiful friend, whom I still have, was Pauline Collins, whom many of you know from Shirley Valentine. So, thankfully, I went to drama school, because it actually pulled me out of a kind of a strict way of looking at life. And I didn't become the singer that I wanted to, but eventually found a way of working with sound, toning and overtoning, which has healing qualities and which does, in some cases, miraculous things. However, after living in London for a few years, I went to Denmark for 10 months and shared a flat with three other women, and one of them used to take me to her home from time to time, and she showed me a pair of polar bear trousers, which her brother had worn when he'd lived up in Greenland, the west coast of Greenland. And she'd said to me, "Mary, you love nature so much, you should go to Greenland." So I roared with laughter and I said, "Ha! Greenland," I said, "I can promise you that'll be the last place in the world that I will ever get to." Little did I know that when I returned to London, I would meet someone who actually would take me up to Greenland. But before that, let me just say that I'd gone to Dublin and on from there to a place in the further up in the centre of Ireland to do a pilgrimage, because that's what I'd been learned to do. If you wanted to make changes in your life, you went on a pilgrimage. So I went on this pilgrimage to get one man out of my life, a very glorious Italian. I'd seen him in my dreams. And then I had met him when I was working in a coffee bar in Hampstead in London. And I thought, well, he's the guy, seen him in his dreams, he is absolutely gorgeous. He's not the sort you should marry. I don't know why I thought that, but it was true. So I went on the pilgrimage to get one man out of my life and to meet the right man. So did that, came back to London, and I had to find somewhere to live, and I also had to find a job. And I looked in the Evening Standard at the advertisements, found a house, and was interviewed by three other women to see whether I was worthy enough to share with them. And they thought, yeah, I possibly was. And then I looked and I saw there was a job with Prince Galitzine. And he had a PR firm, and lots of people had said to me, "Oh, you'd be great at PR." I had no idea what PR was, but I thought, "Oh well, if they think I'll be good at it, I'll go and give it a whirl." Anyway, interviewed by Prince Galitzine, he said, "We have a vacancy for someone to take charge of our library for a couple of weeks. You'd have to read all the newspapers." And you'd have to pick out anything that was relevant for our clients and cut them out and show them to them. And that's what you'd have to do initially. It's only for two weeks. hope you can do it. So I started off with his wife, his Princess Galitzine, who was
Gwyneth.
Forgotten. I'm sorry. I've forgotten the name. And she'd been a television personality. Gwyneth Ty, it might have been. And so when the prince had offered me this job, he'd point me in the direction of the lovely little library that he had, and he said, "There might be a more permanent job that his niece, who looked after it, had tonsillitis, and if she needed an operation, then the job would be mine." So I promise you, this is the only time I've been a little bit naughty, truly. And I said to God, "God, if it won't hurt her in any way, if it'll do her good, could you arrange that she's offered a tonsillitis operation?" Which she was in a few days, and it did her good. And so I got the job. And one of them, on the first sort of newspaper that I opened, the Sunday Times, a full page, there was a picture of this explorer, Wally Herbert. And the whole article was about an exploration he wanted to do to the Arctic, to go right across the Arctic Ocean via the North Pole, never been done before since this way. And the first paragraph was full of the difficulties, the danger, all the obstacles that they could possibly face on this journey. I thought, oh goodness me, having been brought up in the tropics, I really don't think snow and ice has any relevance in my life. And so I closed the paper and got on with life, I thought. And then the prince came into the office one day and he said, "Oh, we've got Wally Herbert here. And no doubt you've read the article about him in the Sunday Times. Oh, yes. Thinking, I must go up and read it properly now. And he said, we're giving him an office to prepare for the last 6 months so that he can finish all his plans for his North Pole trip. And so I thought, oh, go up and read it, read all about all the dangers of this upcoming expedition. And then a couple of days later, the prince brought Wally Herbert into the office, said he'd like to introduce him to everybody. And as I was at that stage, the lowest of the low of in the
hierarchy, yeah.
In the hierarchy, I was the last to be introduced to him. And I took a look at him and felt curiously touched by him. And I really didn't know why, but there was something about this man that deeply touched me. And I could also see that, you know, he's being very polite, but he needed to get on with all of his work, you know, but he was being incredibly friendly and nice with everybody. And then I heard a voice, a male voice, speaking in my ear, which nobody else could hear, which said, married with two children. And as I shook hands with him, I thought, oh God, he's married with two children. How awful. Not realizing that actually I had connected at some level, soul to soul, heart to heart with him, not knowing anything about that kind of stuff. Okay? And I was, at that moment, bereft.
Wow.
Literally bereft. I felt a pain in my heart, thinking, he's owned. He's owned by somebody. He's got two children. How awful. Anyway, long story short, I do have to say that...
you were naughty again.
Several years later, I was to be married to him, and that's the story in itself, his proposal.
We want to know the
I'll jump straight to it. Yeah. So Wally and I became friends, close friends, intimates, but the point was we could go out and we could do wonderful things like rowing on the Serpentine in Hyde Park. But while he'd be dictating letters to sponsors, and I'd be trying to get it down in abysmal shorthand. But the thing was that if we got that done, then we could go out for a really fabulous meal. So that was the way you had to do your bit of work, you know, because it was an expedition, you know. And he explained, sorry about it, but the expedition was the first priority at this time.
Yep. That's how you became friends.
You know, so I agree to that. And yes, and so when he did go off on his trip to the North Pole, which was successful, and the only expedition that has ever gone by dog sledge right across the Arctic Ocean via its longest axis. It was very dangerous, as the newspaper had
said,
warned.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing journey too, and never been repeated. And they did a lot of work on that expedition, so that it wasn't just simply like, I'm the great I am, I've done it. He chose to do it because there was information that he wanted to bring back to share with the world. And Wally felt that this was very, very important, that you shared something of your exploits with the world.
What year was this?
So he went on his journey in 1968, so... He'd already mapped over 44,000 square miles of the Antarctic by then. And had managed to get his map done, because he was a cartographer, managed to get his map produced before the Americans produced the one that they'd taken, you know, from the sky, so to speak. And while he was away, he'd send information back through the prince, and sometimes he'd send stuff to me.
Oh.
And I can remember one day there was the prince come in, looked at my desk, seen something about the expedition, which was very significant, you know. And he said, why wasn't I shown this? And I said, because it's addressed to me. I felt rather good about that. Briefly, though, to say, when Wally got back from his North Pole trip, which was a success, he did lots of lecturing in different parts of the world and went to the States and on a lecture tour. When he came back, he'd already paid for me to have driving lessons, and I drove his fabulous sports car. Just managed to avoid scraping it as I parked it at Heathrow Airport. And he comes. The plane is delayed for 3 hours. So, and this is December, 22nd of December. So he comes rushing, bouncing out of customs 1:30 in the morning, and says, "Hey, will you marry me?"
Oh.
The plane had already been diverted to Shannon for 3 hours, and I thought, "Oh, obviously he's drunk far too much Guinness." So you know, obviously I ignored him. He got to the car. And he said, "Well, you haven't answered my question." So I said, "Well, what question is that?" And he said, "Will you marry me in the morning?" I said, "I don't think you can do things that quickly." So he said, "Well, let's try." So we were married 2 days later, Christmas Eve. And it was glory. 1969, yeah.
That's... what a wonderful... So just to add to the story, the marriage with two children was actually...
ourselves, Wally and me.
Was actually Wally and Murray. Oh,